Whoops, I guess I forgot to start the recording. But the reason that this particular book, Out of Balance, Be a Bounce Back Person, was important and that I received a spiritual prompting to do this one was because I saw so many people in my work and in my family and in my neighborhood who were in two different camps. And as the economy went down, 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 a lot of them also went down, 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 their attitude, their feelings, their emotions, their self-confidence went just further and further down. And they almost, it's almost as if they moved into a house of fear, so that everything was fear-based and a victimhood. And then the other half of the population seemed to move into this land of opportunity and this area where it was like, oh my gosh, now I get to do what I've always wanted to do. I get to be who I've always wanted to be. I get to really welcome the person that I was destined to be. And his example of this was our daughter, Deb, who is a single woman and owns a condo and had just bought a new-to-her car and has a wide circle of friends that like to hike and ski and do travel and do wonderful adventures. And she had been working at a job for 6 years. And she had been putting in about 60 hours a week and getting more and more and more frustrated. But it was what's called, at least what I call, is golden handcuffs. Because those are handcuffs that hold you there. She was being held there by loyalty and because she had a 401k and she had dental and vision and things that were important to her. So when she was downsized, she was crushed. And, of course, she took it personally. And it was, how could they do this to me? I have given them so much. I have been there when they needed it, and when someone went on vacation, I was always covering, and they could call me at home, and I never took a sick day, and on and on. And I said, but Deb, you've hated that job. Well, yeah. Well, then this is the universe saying, hey, Deb, here's an opportunity. Go find something better. And she said, but nobody's hiring. Well, nobody's hiring for that particular thing, but they are hiring for something else, and you can reinvent yourself. Now, for those of you who happen to be on, who are part of our circle of friends in Montana, I have to tell you the rest of the story. Deb came here. She needed a couple of weeks to just regroup. And so we said, sure, this is your home. Come here. And she said, if I regroup in my own apartment, it's too easy to watch movies or to clean out the silverware drawer or, you know, clean out the lint trap or feel sorry for myself. And so she came to Montana to regroup. And I belong to a group of women called Women Who Dare. And so she, I talked her into going with me that day. And then at the very last minute, when we got there, Jennifer Shyrock, who is Rainmaker Resumes, was presenting. And Jennifer was giving kind of obscure generalities about doing a resume. And Deb said, well, I happen to have one in my pocket. And so Jennifer said, well, may we use your resume? So Deb got this incredible opportunity. I think Jennifer charges like $150 an hour or something. And so Deb said, yes, please do. So they went through her resume, And all of the women in the room were able to give ideas and give concrete things that really helped her see things that she wasn't aware of. And so she changed, came home and put up Photoshop and changed her resume, went back. She lives in Utah, where all of the hiking is so wonderful and her skiing is so wonderful. And a couple of weeks later, a friend called and said, they're hiring at the software company that I'm at. And she said, I'll set up an appointment for you. Deb said, hey, I really appreciate that. So Deb's appointment was like Thursday at 2. And she goes in, and the president's coming out of his office, and he gets great big, his eyes get great big, and he says, I completely forgot that you were coming. I am so sorry. I apologize. Well, come in. I have just a minute. Just come in. And so she went in, and she gave him her resume, and he looked through the resume, and he said, you don't want the job we're hiring for. That's not a good fit for you. Why don't we create one for you? And she said, okay. And so they did. And she started the next week, and she had the freedom to create it the way she wanted to allow her flexible time, to allow her time to do this and to ski and to hike and to do all of those things. And she worked four 10-hour days. And just recently met us in Las Vegas. She was there with her friends for the National Finals Rodeo and told us she had just gotten a promotion and a raise. And I look back on that and think how much happier she is this year than she was a year ago, when she was in that house of fear, when she thought, oh my gosh, the world is caving in. There is nothing that I can do, no matter what I do. It's going to be bad. They're going to foreclose on this. And now she is in a place of peace, a place of empowerment. And so the message of that story that I hope that you will get is that sometimes when we are broke, we tend to be broken, and we don't need to be. What we need to be is consider it as a kick in the pants to think, huh, maybe this is an opportunity to do something completely different. Something that I had never thought of before. So as I was working on this particular part of the out of balance, be a bounce back person, there are six areas in everyone's life. And we're balancing them every single day, whether you're a single woman like Deb, whether you're a grandmother like me, whether you are like Teresa, who still has young children at home. These six areas are health and wellness, emotional and mental, and when we're broke, we sometimes give in to those negative thoughts that crowd our minds so much. The next one is our spiritual and our ethical. And I want to touch on that one a little bit in a few minutes, because it doesn't matter how much money you have if you don't have character, if you don't have the ethics that will help you to handle it in a wise method. And then the next one is money and career, and that's what we're talking about today. We'll be talking about some of the others at other times, but today we're talking about money and career, and then social and friends, which is a huge, huge, important part of wellness, because sometimes when we're broke, we go into a state of isolation. And I saw Deb do that. I saw us as a family when we were in a period where we were broke is that rather than go out and do things that were fun, that were free, we stayed inside and felt sorry for ourselves. So social and friendship is so important. And then the last one is family. And for those who are like Deb, she has her birth family, but then she also has her family of friends. She has her family of chosen friends that she has gone out of her way to develop, and they mean every bit as much to her as we do. We are on a whole different level than that family of friends, and that's super, super important. So we're going to talk a little bit about money, and the quote that I really love says, well, money will buy you a pretty good dog, but it won't buy you the wag of his tail. And I love that because that ties into ethical, it ties into our character, and it ties into the fact that people who win the lottery may have money, but if they don't have good skills and they don't have a good self-confidence, it's not going to do them any good. They're going to lose it anyway. So when we talk about money, I would like to ask Tracy and Judith and Teresa here, and Diego has not come on yet, is probably listening to the recording as a number of other people are. But I would like to ask you how you developed your basic fundamental beliefs about money. And to start you off, I will share with you that I grew up on a farm in Idaho, and my parents were always very, very conservative, even when the crops were good and they had so much money, because they were so worried about the future that they settled for less. And they couldn't allow themselves to enjoy the good times and to really invest in things that would make it easier for them, because they were so fearful about what was coming. And Tracy, can you tell us a little bit about where your basic money questions or your basic money feelings came from?
Yeah. My parents both worked, and I was a latchkey kid. And by the time I was 11, my parents divorced. So really, my money ethics and character was developed from my two sets of grandparents. They were both business owners. One was a general contractor, and the other ran a ranch in Idaho and also an insurance company. So not only did they save for the future, but they also spent and had fun as well. So well into their retirement, they were a little bit more conservative, but they were able to have fun as well. And I think, you know, kind of going through where I am today in my life, I know that I need to save, but I know that I also need to spend for my future as I go on to my new adventure. And just that character, and as you said, spiritual and ethical in that character, I'm able to sit back and say, okay, am I doing the right thing, and how long am I going to give myself, you know, so I am allowing myself to go out and be adventurous and spend the money, but also know that I need to save a little bit, too, just in case something doesn't work out, because I need to start getting paid for what I do.
Well, that's always a consideration for women. I have to tell you, Tracy, that I am so grateful you shared that story, because that gives me insight, so much insight into your entrepreneurial side. And I love that. And as I grew older, I was a midlife surprise, but as I grew older, my parents did do more entrepreneurial things. And I can see why having those role models really helped you to not be afraid,
from the corporate world, and your story of Deb, Deb and I basically have the same story. It was really funny that you talked about Jennifer, because when I got the phone call that I lost my job, I was sitting with Jennifer going over my resume.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes, isn't it interesting that the universe or God gives us a kick in the behind when we didn't have courage enough to do it ourselves?
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's as we look back, we see, yep, that was probably one of the best things that happened to me. And as a parent educator, I see a lot of times that parents are afraid to allow their kids to fail. They're so busy saving them that when the kids do fall down or they do fail, they don't have that resiliency to bounce back, because there's always been someone there to pick them up. So I'm grateful that you shared your story. Judith, do you feel comfortable sharing a little bit?
Yes, it's a very interesting subject. I haven't often thought about my parents and how they, you know, what they taught me, and this is making me realize what I did get from them. We were from a very modest means in England, but my father did have a job, and my mom worked somewhat part-time, but she was there while we were growing up, all three of us, unlike Tracy, with her situation. And, you know, my father did show, you know, he allowed us to do things, and, you know, even though we didn't have too much money, there was always activities that he encouraged us to do. There was a vacation where, it wasn't expensive, but we would do things together as a family. And he saved, and he taught, he did, you know, and my mom, there was that element of, you know, just remember, while you're buying whatever it is you are, you do need to save some of it. So we were lucky; we had a good grounding there with them. And my father was always excited for us when we would achieve something. I feel like that's part of why I'm able to be quite adventurous over the past sort of 20 years in how I've, come along from coming over to the U.S. from the U.K. and, moving, from the New York area to Montana to start again. And I think my father has a lot to be thankful to him for that, because he made me feel comfortable that I could do that. But, and I'm also smiling at your story about your daughter, too, because I actually think I'm probably in that situation now. That golden handcuff description is just priceless,
It is.
Because they do that, it's sort of, I'm having that situation and the conflict and, you do have to realize that at any moment, on a whim, they can just go, well, thank you, but we don't need you anymore. And you've got to look further afield, and you've got to have that confidence, haven't you, to, go forward in other areas. So very, very interesting.
Yeah. Well, and thank you so much for sharing that. Teresa isn't comfortable sharing today, which is great because a lot of times we aren't, and we're taking things in. I am interested in the stories that your experiences were a foundation for you, And yet my experience was a foundation that helped me, just like with Deb, to regroup and think, I don't want to do that. And so as I married and had children, we made it a goal that we would be, we would save, and my husband's much, much, much better about saving, but that money is not real because you can lose it in an instant. You can lose it when you're on a farm. You can lose it with a bunch of grasshoppers. You can lose it when it's in the stock market. We saw that a couple of years ago. And so my goal was that we are going to invest in experiences. And we made that kind of our motto, that that instead of investing in things, we'll invest in experiences. And the last family reunion that we had, and we had our six adult children and 10 grandchildren, we gave a teaching moment, and we always do. We have a family council, and this year it was on yearn, discern, earn, no, yearn, discern, learn, earn, and then return. And I'll make sure that I give you a copy of that sometime. Just remind me. But what we wanted to teach them was to have a realistic idea of money, that money is just a vehicle. That's all it is. It's just a vehicle to get you from A to B. And it isn't a measure of how successful it is. It isn't a measure of how smart you are. It isn't a measure of how lucky you are. It's just a vehicle. So you need to decide where you want that vehicle to take you. And if you are a wise consumer, you can, if indeed what you really want is a family vacation, and which is something that we have agreed that's one of our values, is a yearly family vacation with everyone. We can either save like crazy and go without, or we can look for bargains and we can assign everybody to have the food for one day, and we can do incredible ways to arrive at the same thing, which is being together. And so the solution to financial well-being isn't more money, it's in changing your beliefs about money and recognizing that prosperity and abundance are everywhere around us. I can't begin to tell you how many things came together so that we could all be together in one place for a week. It was pretty amazing to get 20 people together for a week and not have to take second mortgages, not have to do any of those things. So there is prosperity. There is happiness. There is fun and fulfillment all over, all over. We don't need to do without. And I want to share with you a story that I shared recently in a movie that I was just in with Jack Canfield and Marcy Shimoff, and it's called The Keys of the Kingdom, and can't wait to get it here. It isn't ready for distribution yet, but it will be distributed by the Spiritual Cinema in April. And I talked to them. The story I shared was about something that I have learned in hospice and as I have worked with people's memoirs, that there are three regrets that people have at the end of their life. And the number one regret, which was echoed by my mother, was that they wished they would have risked more. And what my mother said was, We chose the known over the unknown, and the unknown would have been fine. And so people wish they would have risked more. The second one, they wish they would have stopped along the way and reflected more. And essentially that's what Deb did when she came here and regrouped and thought about her life and thought, is this who I want to be? Is this where I want to go with my life? Is this the kind of person I want to be? Because if we don't stop and reflect, we're going to get there anyway. And we're going to be on our way to Squire Simmons' funeral home and thinking, oh, crap, I really didn't want to do that. Oh, I really wanted to be a global speaker. I should have done this. And we don't want to do that. The third thing, and this is a major, major one, is that they wish they would have contributed more. And what that means is joining in. Just like the people who are listening to this today or who are listening to the replay, they wish they would have jumped in. And one man will always stick in my mind, and he said, I wished I would have held my hand up because I knew the answer, but I was afraid to. And so by contributing, it's sharing our philosophies, it's sharing what we have, it's helping others, it's mentoring, it's going outside of our comfort zone, and it's also contributing that money. It's sharing the money that we do have, because no matter how much or how little we have enough to share. That's just part of our character and our values and part of who we are. Now, I want to ask you, I think most of you are pretty aware of what affirmations are, but I want to share some with you that I have found from T. Harv Eckert. I think I'm pronouncing his name right. Yeah, Eckert. And it's The Secret of the Millionaire Mind. And a lot of the things, and I also like John Paul Evans, and his is, I can't remember. It's 5 Things My Millionaire Friends Taught Me. And another great one, if you are at a used bookstore, get The Science of Getting Rich by Wallace Wattles. And The Dynamic Laws of Prosperity by Catherine Ponder. And I happened to be reading The Dynamic Laws of Prosperity last night by Catherine Ponder, rereading it and rereading it. This will make 175 times I've read it probably. Mm-hmm. But it was published, 62, published in 62, but I think that she wrote it even earlier than that. And as I was reading it, I was struck by what is happening in this economy and how there's always this bad side. There's the yin and the yang. And, Tracy, you mentioned your grandparents and what strong role models they were. And yet I'm guessing that they also went through the Depression. So they learned things during that Depression that will serve you well, because probably in addition to being an entrepreneur, your grandma taught you how to make soup for 1,000. I know that was part of my parents' heritage, that they knew how to get along. And one of the story, or one of the chapters in my book has to do with the fact that of all of the bankruptcies in America, hang on just a minute. Can you just throw her outside? Yes. Our little dog has joined us here on this recording. Of all of the bankruptcies in America, could have been forestalled. Now get this, with $200 a month extra. Now really absorb that in. Because $200 a month extra means that in January you have $200, that you owe an extra $200, but in February you owe an extra $400 plus interest. And then in March you owe an extra $600 plus interest. And then in April it's $600 plus interest. And so if we just had an extra $200, and what we call it in our house is the velvet, that gives us just that little soft spot that if a transmission goes out, we can fix it. It isn't a catastrophe because we have that little teeny bit of extra. But I am amazed as I teach this to parents and to families that most of them cannot think of a way to increase their income by $200 a month. And the reality is there are so many ways to find an extra $200 a month. How many of you have seen young girls now with these little feathers hanging out of their earrings? Do you know that was a craze that started in Idaho by a young girl who took some feathers out of her dad's fly tying thing, put them on earrings and sold them at a show, and then put them up on Etsy. And now it's all over the world. She is making so much money by selling feathers to beauty shops to put in for women to put in their hair or to put on their ears or to do whatever. There are so many ways to make an extra $200. And when we have found a way to make an extra $200, then we think, what's a way to maximize that? Because we want to leverage that investment so that it isn't labor intensive for us to do it, but that we can then get other people to do it for us. So she did the feathers, put them on Etsy, now has all of the other girls making them and selling them for her. What our family, when we were looking for a way for our children to pay their way through college, we decided to sell cinnamon almonds. And the name of our company was We're Nuts. And it was so great, so much fun. And we leveraged that. Each year we would do something different. We did catalog sales. We were up at the university. We were at art shows. We were all over. And we had so much fun as a family and really leveraged that to the point that when our kids were through school, we were able to sell that business. And all our initial quest was an extra $200 a month. So I want to go back to something that T. Harv Eker said, and these are affirmations, they're declarations, and you put your hand over your heart. And so if I could get each of you to do that, just put your hand on your heart and just say this internally and externally. What I was modeled around money was their way. I get to choose my way. I release my non-supportive money experiences from the past, and I create my own new and rich future. And I observe my thoughts, and I entertain only those that are going to empower me. I create my own financial success. My goal is to become a millionaire and more. And love to, when I share my book with you, I think that you will find that being a millionaire is not so far out of your reach. You can do it. I commit to thinking big. I choose to help thousands and thousands of people. And Tracy, this is one that I can hear you saying. I commit to helping thousands and thousands of people. I promote my value to others with passion and enthusiasm. And here's one that I really like. I am an excellent receiver. I'm open and willing to receive massive amounts of money into my life. And here's another one. I choose to get paid based on my results. I think always of win-win. I focus on building my net worth. And here's one that I have to repeat often because I tend to just trust my husband to do it. I am an excellent money manager. I am a good steward of the money that comes into my life. I take care of it, I respect it, and I expand on the money that comes in. My money works hard for me and makes me more and more money. And here's the one that I want all of us to really touch our hearts as we say this and touch our heads and say, I am committed to constantly learning and growing and expanding. And when we do that, we are learning and growing and expanding, not just in health and not just in emotions and not just spiritually and not just with social and family, but also in money. We are growing and we are developing new ways to do this. So let me open the lines and see how that felt to you. Did it feel a little fakey? Sometimes people will say, it's a little woo-woo for me. But the reality is you have these thoughts anyway. You might as well replace the thoughts of, oh, I can't do it, I'm broke, I'm not going to pay, how am I going to pay the rent, Christmas is coming, I don't have enough toys for the kids, how am I going to find any money for this? You might just as well replace those thoughts with these. Does anybody want to share how those affirmations made you feel or how those declarations made you feel? Judith, would you like to share with us?
Yes, Judy. I thought they're very on point, and the small business that I'm beginning to operate now has the philosophy that you are mentioning. It's one that Tracy also is very, very, she does all the time very well, and that's, to give out and, sort of not expect anything in return, but if something comes, that's wonderful. And just to have a more positive outlook. And, to look for those things, to be open to those things to come in. So, very good for me.
Well, and I think sometimes, especially right now in America, it's, or not just America, I guess in the Christian tradition, it is Christmas and we are giving. We are in this mode of giving. But it's important that we receive. That we really receive promptings of our spirit, that we receive those little nudges of our intuition, that we recognize when we're being guided, and that we are open. And so when Judith talks about this idea of receiving, I see her with her arms wide open, and I see her thinking, yeah, here it comes, yeah. That one little idea, I could make $200 a month on that. Sure, I could. Sure, I could make an extra $200 by doing X or by tweaking how I'm doing Y or by stop spending ABC. The only two ways to get more money into our household or more income is to either increase our income by doing something entrepreneurial or decreasing the outgo. And we can do that. We can do that. And And when I was talking about teaching our kids at our family council this year, we were trying to talk to our teenagers about the difference between yearning and discerning, because it's important that they yearn. I want them to want. I want them to be eager. I want them to think, I would like to have that, or, man, I really want that. I want them to do that, but I also want them to discern whether that's a want or a need and whether it has to be accomplished right now, because discerning is that power that we give to money that money doesn't have. We say, well, if I had money, I would buy this. But maybe not. Maybe what we really need to do is think, is that a good place to put my money? Is that a wise choice of my assets? So it's really important that while we are open to opportunities and receiving, that we also discern those things that are going to be good for us and those that we love in the future. So, Trace, do you have anything you want to add, or are you anything special you would like to share? And once again, you don't have to.
Well, I love all of the little statements, because it does reflect back to, okay, this is where I am in my life, and to make sure I am being a good steward of what is going on. But, you know, what I'm reflecting on is the velvet. Now, something I have not been concentrating on the last 4 months, and I need to. And we're not, you know, because of what we're doing, we're not excessively spending, but I know I'm not consciously going, oh, where's, you know, do I have velvet? Am I, you know, making sure that I'm putting that away? And I can be. I can be a lot more steward about the velvet.
And isn't it amazing, too, what the velvet is for each person? Because it doesn't, for some, it may be a massage or a facial or something. That just isn't it for me. That isn't what, that just doesn't do it for me. But a long phone call with a daughter really is. That's the velvet. That's what I want the freedom to do. And one of the things that I'm not sure that I mentioned, but each of us in our wealth, which we have so much of, we are all so wealthy, is that we have three major components. We have time, we have treasure, and we have talent. And a lot of time in our, when we're asked to contribute to the food bank or to a church or to the school, when we, in the times in our life, like Therese has young children, she doesn't have the treasure to give to them. And she doesn't really have the time, but she does have the talent. And so that we need to recognize that those are major, major components of our wealth. And that velvet. Tracy, what is the velvet for you?
All of the above.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I appreciate.
I think right now it's just staying focused, and that's stuff we've discussed in the mastermind, and just focus and be intentional every day to build on tomorrow. And just to make sure I'm intentional about being a good steward of our finances right now. Because I, you know, my husband is so gracious and blessed to have him to let me be entrepreneur, and he is the one that actually pushed me.
Yes.
Gently, I must say, into saying, you know, this is what you want to do. He's like, do it. You know, my velvet is to make sure that I am also not overspending or overextending my time, because I actually feel like I'm more busy now than I was when I was working 60 to 70 hours a week in the corporate structure. And a lot of that is volunteering and doing a bunch of other things. So the time and talent, I need to make sure I'm being a good steward of that time that I'm offering. So that's probably mm-hmm. my velvet right now, is my time.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and isn't it true that that as we reflect back on our life, there are times, and I do believe that our life is a sequence. And the, you know, into every, what is that, I don't know what that scripture is, there is a time to plant and a time to reap and a time to sow and a time to reap. And I do think that our lives go in sequences. And I think that in each of those sequences, the little cocktail of time, treasure, and talent is different. It's completely different for a new mother who has no time at all. And probably at that point, even making cookies is overwhelming. But to those of us who have lived through that, then we get to a different mixture in that. Well, I just want to close this by expressing my gratitude, and there will be a replay of this, and you're more than welcome to listen to it, or we're going to do it again when we figure out all of the technical things. So we're very grateful that you were our guinea pigs and were willing to work with us. But I want to assure you that money, happiness, fun, fulfillment are not in a limited supply. There is so much abundance. And if we think that money is a competition and that there's only so much money in the world, then we end up protecting ourselves and thinking, oh, I don't want to share this with you because that will mean there's less for me. And if we can change our thoughts, we change our outcome. And a lot of times we will perceive those who are well-to-do in a way that's derogatory. And that often comes from backgrounds where, if they're wealthy, they must not be good people. If they're to be wealthy, they must have screwed someone somewhere along the line. And that's just simply not true. It just really isn't. And if we believe that, and I have many family members who believe that, if you believe that, then why would you ever want to be wealthy? There's no way that your subconscious would allow you to be financially solvent. What you need to do is bless those who are wealthy. Bless them and learn from them. We need to recognize that it is okay to have money or to have assets or to be able to take care of ourselves and take care of our families. It's okay. It is not only okay, it's good. And so when we are worried, and at the first I talked about the house of fear and the house of love, and money frees you up. This changing your attitude will free you up from living in scarcity, which is pronounced scare city, so that house of fear, into magnificence, which is pronounce magnified sense. Money gives us options. That's all it gives us. It isn't real. It doesn't mean that we'll never get sick. It doesn't mean that our transmissions will never go out. It just gives us options. And it is a pathway to freedom. And so I want to encourage each one of us to embark on that pathway and to say, yes, this is the time for me to step up and to recognize that I am a good steward of money. I am a good steward of time and talent and treasure. And I can use those time and treasure and talent to bless others. And I'm ready to do that. And the safest way you're ever going to double your money is to fold it and put it in your pocket. But that isn't how you get abundance, by hiding it. You get abundance by being out there, by saying, okay, I'll help you do this if you'll help me do that, or I promise you, and here's my mantra with Teresa, who is my assistant. I promise you, when I get rich, you will too. I promise you that the more money I earn, the more money you will. So abundance and recognizing that even if we're broke, we don't have to be broken. Every one of us, and we really don't have to be poor. Because poor is a state of mind that all the money in the world's not going to change. Being broke is a temporary situation, and you think, wow, this isn't the best thing in the world. I want to get out of this as fast as I can. How do I do it? And then you think of solutions. You find ways that you can make an extra $200 a month. You can make an extra $400 a month. You can then have that $400 a month in an investment that will be earning interest, and then that $400 plus interest will then turn into $600 plus interest, and we will have money working for us rather than against us. So I am grateful for you joining us today and want to wish you a happy, happy, happy holiday. And wish you, give you a blessing that you will indeed be successful in those things that you want and those things that you desire, and to tell you that you do deserve them. They are for you, and they will, I can't think of anybody who would do better with money than the people who are on this recording. So thank you for spending this limited amount of time in your busy, busy schedules with us. Thank you again, and we will talk to you very soon. Bye. Where do I do? Just hang up?
Just hang up.